Okay, we're going to start at the beginning of Ted Bavim and Aleph. We'll just review quickly what we saw at the end of Yudalad Amibet. We had the Mishnah, and then after the Mishnah, we brought down a Machlokes about someone has a condition in order for a nether to be Chal. He places a condition, and the condition is on the first day, and then the nether will be Chal on the second day. Or the opposite way around, where he has a nether today that is conditioned on some sort of factor that will take place the next day. We said everyone agrees where the Tanai is first and then the Neder takes place in the second half that he can go ahead and trigger the Tanai on the first day because we know that he's going to be careful about his Neder when it comes to the second day. The question came up when his Neder applied to the first day and his Tanai, his condition, is only after the Neder. So then, is a person careful about his Tanai? I mean, is he careful about that condition that he places afterwards or is he not careful about that condition? That's Machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Nachman. Yehuda believes that if a person says that I will not sleep today, if I sleep tomorrow, then a person may not sleep today because he could come to sleep till tomorrow. And we don't trust him to, if he sleeps today, not violate the condition that he has tomorrow not to sleep. Whereas Rav Nachman says, no, if a person wants to sleep today, he just then has to fulfill his tonight's condition tomorrow. So now the Gemara is going to challenge Rav Yehuda's position from the Mishnah. It says, the top of Tedvomen Al Tznat Konim Sheini Shani Yashan Sheyashen Shani Mahaleich Shani Medaber. Person takes a neder about sleeping, walking, or speaking. Hey Chidami, what's the case in our Mishnah? Ilay Medikutani. Is it like literally what it says in the Mishnah? Shani Yashen that I will sleep. Mihavi Nidra. Is that really a neder? V'hatznan. We know Chomer B'Shuvos Shuvos Chalot Al Devar Sheyesh Bo Mamash. Right, that we know by Shavuos, there's a Chumrah by Shavuos, that what, that they can work even on intangible items, not just tangible ones. And Mashen came in the Dorim, that's not true. V'sheina davar she'en bo mamashu, and sleep is an intangible item. If it's an intangible item, then how can he make a nether on it? So that cannot be the interpretation of our Mishnah. Oh, the Amar must be konim einai v'sheina. That he what? He places it on something that's Dabar Sheyesh Bo Mamash, that's his eyes. He says that my eyes are refrained from sleep. So now he's found something tangible on which the nether is placed, even though the results are a restricting himself in something that is an intangible item. So now, when he does such a thing, does that work? When he says, I will not sleep, and he gives no limit to how long he's not going to sleep for, Mishav Kinanle Ad Abad Yisr Avar. Do we really leave him to have that nether bichal and then wait until he does fall asleep and then give him malchus? Is that really true? If a person takes a shivua, shloishan shloshi yamim, a person who says, I will not sleep for 3 days, which is a physical impossibility, malkinoto, viyashin the altar, we give him malchus right away and we say, you can sleep, go to sleep. Why? Because we believe that that is a shvuat shav. Now, why do we give him malchus right away, or how does this work? It's machlokas in the Rishonim. The Ron points out over here that this, his belief is that this is a shvuat shav. The shvuat is not chal at all. It doesn't work. Since it's a shvuat that you could, from its inception, cannot have been mekuyam, that has no validity because it's impossible to hold, to have it take effect and work. So therefore, it's as if it never took effect, and there's no shvuat at all. And therefore, you get malchus for shvuat shav, and then you go sleep immediately. There are others that believe now that it really is the Shavuot is Chal, but because it's impossible for you to fulfill the Shavuot, we give you the Malchus right away. Give you the Malchus right away because now we know you're not going to fulfill the Shavuot. There's no way you can fulfill that Shavuot. But there is still a Shavuot that is Chal here, and that will have Nafkaminos in other cases where it's possible for the Shavuot to be Chal, and even though it's an impossibility for you to fulfill the Shavuot, nevertheless, it's not like sleep, where it's a physical impossibility, but maybe some other physical limitation. All right, now, Ella the Amar Konim Eini Bishina the Machar Im Ishanayom. So now the case in our Mishnah must be a case where he says, I will not sleep tomorrow if I sleep today. So Mar says, Amar Kobi Yisrei Mizdahir. That everybody agrees to, even Rabbi Yehuda, even Rabbi Nachman agreed that everybody agrees that that's a simple explanation, that whenever the restriction follows the Tanai, that nobody questions that in that instance you can let the Tanai be triggered in order to have the Easter the next day. What must be the case? Right, the person takes a neder that he will not sleep today. If I sleep tomorrow, and if he does not sleep today, what is kinaim lemachar? My Right, then if he doesn't sleep today, meaning that Rabbi Yehuda, who says, when you have such an instance where the neder is taken for the today, and the tanai will be triggered tomorrow, Rabbi Yehuda says you're not allowed to sleep on the first day, in case you violate the tanai the next day. If that's the case, if he doesn't sleep today, then there's no question, why would you ever have a violation of Bayachel the next day if you don't sleep on the first day? Elalav must be a case that he slept on the first day. He slept on the day of his neder. I mean, they said, I won't sleep if I sleep tomorrow. And Alma, Ethan is night that you're allowed to sleep. But to you, for your views, then that would be a problem for Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Because Rabbi Yehuda believes that whenever you have a neder that's for today, I will not sleep today is the neder, and it'll be triggered by if you sleep tomorrow. Then Rabbi Yehuda says, you're not allowed to sleep today in case you trigger the neder tomorrow. If that's the case, our Mishnah, based on the way the Gemara is setting up the Mishnah now, would not be like Rabbi Yehuda, because the Mishnah is saying in that exact case, that's the case of our Mishnah, in that case you would violate Bayachel on the next day if you did sleep. Oh, but how could you violate Bayachel? According to Rabbi Yehuda, you never could sleep on the first day. Must mean that you could sleep on the first day. If you could sleep on the first day, then you could violate Bayachel by violating the Tanai, or triggering the Tanai on the second day. Gemara says, no, Rabbi Yehuda answers, Kiktani de'inayim. Now, what it means is that if he does sleep, right, and therefore, if he does sleep, he will violate Bayachel. Therefore, he should not sleep on the first day. He should not sleep on the first day, because if he does sleep on the first day, then you have a possibility, a good possibility, that he will trigger the Tanai on the next day, and that will violate Bayachel. So that's how the Mishnah is. And then Rabbi Yehuda explains the Mishnah according to his own opinion. Ravina Amar, Lolam Kiktani. No, our Mishnah you can take literally. Umay Bayachel, what does it mean Bayachel? We said that a neder does not take effect on something that is intangible. So how do you explain the word Bayachel in our Mishnah? Midrabanan, that's only rabbinic. It's not Asur, meaning Asur Dioraisa, Minatoro, but it's really a rabbinic. If from the rabbis we established that even intangible items, Nedarim can't take effect. So now Gemara says, Mi'ika Bayachel Midrabanan. Is there such a concept as a restriction of not violating your word when your neder takes effect, midrabanan? In. Right, we have such a thing, Latanya. This is a Vahatanya to prove our point. Certain items that are mutar, and other people are nohei, not to make them mutar, so you see here that something that is a minhag, that creates an isur, you are not allowed to be matir, or allow these people to violate their minhag, because of lo yachal devaro. And even though that is only a dirabanan, a rabbinic effective effect of the bayachal devaro, we see nevertheless that it takes hold. So too over here in our Mishnah, when it says bayachal below yachal devaro, as opposed to the next Mishnah is by Shavua, it says asur. Asur means that the Shavua, when it's talking about an intangible mind, takes effect midoraisa. Whereas here, they use a cryptic lashon, not a basura, but below yachal devaro, to tell you that this, when you take nedarim in such a manner that it's talking about intangible items, it's only restricted mide rabbanan and not mide oraisa. Now the Gemara is going to bring other challenges to the position of Rabbi Yehuda. The next comes from a Mishnah. It's not a Mishnah. She'atne liyada Pesach, that a husband says to his wife, you cannot get any hanah from me until Pesach. Im telchi lebeit avicha rechag, if you go back to your parents' house until Sukkot. So here he is. He's before Pesach, and he says, from now until Pesach, you're not going to get any hanah from me. If you go from now until the following Sukkot, you go to your parents' house. Hocha lifnei Pesach, if she went before Pesach to her parents' house, then she's triggered the neder, and asura banato at Pesach, and then she cannot get hanah from him until Pesach. Hocha lifnei Pesach, asura. So it sounds like only if she went before Pesach, she's asura. Lo hocha lo, but if she does not go, then not. Meaning that until Pesach, she can continue to get hanah from him, even though the tanai, the condition, runs until Sukkot. So say, for instance, she gets hanah from him through Pesach, and then after Pesach, the time period for the hanah is over, but yet the condition that if she goes to her parents' house is still in effect. As a possibility, she could go to her parents' house, even after Pesach, and that would create a problem for the hanah she got before Pesach. And yet, we're not worried about it. And if we're not worried about it, then what? Then that is against the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, when we have a point where the neder is up and only the tanai remains, we say, don't violate the neder up front in case you trigger the tanai. So in this case, it's CB. We should say the woman should not get any hanah from her husband, because she might later trigger this problem by going to her parents' house, even after Pesach. So that's against Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Abba. No, Halcha lifnei Pesach, he answers up the Mishnah. When she goes before Pesach, then Asura Viloke. Not only is she restricted from doing and getting Hana, but she also gets Malkus for it. Because now, when she has walked, already gone to her parents' house, now when she gets Hana, she's already in the Nether, and through a Maisa, through an action, she is getting Hana. Lo Halcha, had she never gone to her parents' house, then Asura Isura Ba'alma, then it's only Asur. Why, like Rabbi Yehuda says, why is it only Asura Ba'alma? Because there, even if she violates the Tanai afterwards, meaning that she triggers the Tanai after Pesach, and she did get Hana, she's over Lo Yachel, but it's not through an action, because now it's already after the fact that she's triggering it, and we're looking backwards to say that she violated Lo Yachel, but there's no Malkus in that case. So that would explain the Mishnah according to Rabbi Yehuda, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, there's a restriction, always a restriction on her from getting Hana from her husband, because she might go to her parents' house before Pesach and even after Pesach. Ah, why does the Mishnah differentiate whether she goes before Pesach, when she goes before Pesach? That's a differentiation, because if she goes before Pesach and there's a gets Hana, she will not only be Asur, but also be Malkus. Whereas, if she goes after Pesach, that will only be Isura, and therefore we don't allow her. We say it's Asur for her to get Hana in the first stage, even if she hasn't gone, because she might later go to her parents' house. And that's how we answer up Rabbi Yehuda in that Mishnah, Ema Seifa. Now what are you going to do with the second half of that Mishnah? The second half of Mishnah is the opposite case. That, he says, if she goes, Acher Pesach v'bal yachel devaro, v'izaloi tani lifnei Pesach, mi'ika bal yachel. Right? So what is the second half of the Mishnah? It says, after Pesach, if she goes, then it's bal yachel devaro. According to Yehuda, where you're not allowed to get any Hana before Pesach, Mika Ba'yachel, how can she ever violate Ba'yachel? Meaning that before Pesach, she's not allowed to get Hana, that's Yehuda's opinion. Therefore, if she goes after Pesach, what's there to worry about? Let her go. She never got Hana, so there's no violation of the Nazir. Elab Shita, must be a case, the Itani, that she got Hana. Oma, Mitani, if that's the case, that she got Hana, and that'll be a problem for Rabbi Yehuda's case. Why? Because Rabbi Yehuda says she cannot get Hana. We prevent her from getting Hana, or in case she triggers it tonight later. But if the Mishnah offers the option or the possibility that she could violate Ba'yachel because she did get Hana beforehand, then that's against Rabbi Yehuda's position. That the Mishnah will be against Rabbi Yehuda. So Mar says, Kik Tani di Iti Tani, Harizeb Ba'yachel Dvaro. No, the Mishnah is saying if. Meaning that she is restricted from getting Hana before, like the Rabbi Yehuda says, she's restricted from getting Hana before Pesach, because she might go later on to her parents' house. Ah, so what do you do with the part of the Mishnah that says that if she does go, she violates Ba'yachel? That means that she did get Hana, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, she's restricted. Well, maybe she did violate that Isser. She violated the Isser and still got Hana. If she does that, and then goes, then she is, what? Over Ba'yachel Devaro. It's another challenge. At Nehenit Li Arachag. Says, you may not get any Hana from me until Sukkot, until Feza Beit Avich at a Pesach. You go to your father's house, or your parents' house, before Pesach. So, Halcha lifnei Pesach, if she goes before Pesach, then she's triggered the Neder. Then she's Asur Banato at a Chag. Then she cannot get Hana from him all the way until Sukkot, because she violated the Tanai, or not violated, but she triggered the Tanai, and therefore now the Neder is in effect. Umuteret Leleich Achara Pesach. And then she's mutter to go after Pesach, because after Pesach, there's no trigger of the Tanai. Right, so now it sounds from this Mishnah, Halcha Asura. If she goes, then it's Asur. Lo Halcha, if she does not go, then it's not restricted. Why not? Why shouldn't she be getting restricted from getting enough from her husband until Pesach? Because she might go. She may go to her parents' house, or why isn't she Asur by now, until after the point of the Tanai is over? Because maybe she will go to her parents' house before Pesach, so at least until Pesach, she should be restricted in Hana. So Mar says, I'm a Rabbi Wadin, Dafila lo halcha asura. So Rabbi answers up, like we answered above, that also over here, even if she didn't go, she's asura. But halcha, if she actually goes and triggers the tonight, the net is in effect, then she's asura. She may not get Hana. Viloka, if she does get Hana, she gets Malkus. Lo halcha, if she does not go, then her restriction are restricting her from getting Hana from her husband is asura b'alma. It's an asura b'alma because she might later go to her husband's house, but that does not get Malkus, because that Isur is simply a preventative measure. It's not a measure she's violated anything, because she hasn't triggered the Tanai yet. So therefore we do a preventative measure and say, do not get Hana now, in order that you will not trigger the Tanai later. I do want to point out here, there's a very interesting Ran here that brings down a Machlokus between himself and the Rambam. So So it's a general question if a person takes a neder about someone else. Meaning that in this case, the husband is restricting the wife in hana. When she goes ahead and gets hana, who has violated the neder? The husband took the neder. So if she gets hana, is the husband then responsible? Meaning that his neder has been violated, he'll get malchus. Or is the woman who wants to get malchus, meaning she violated the neder, even though she didn't take the neder, maybe she is now chayach v'lo yachal dvaro. This happens to be a machlokus between the Ran and the Rambam. If you look on the previous Amud on Ted Vav Amud Aleph in the Ran, it's towards the bottom of the Ran. It says halcha surah ben atov lokeh kolmar lokehi, that the Ran believes that she gets malchus when she violates his neder of restricting her in her not. She gets malchus, but who ain't a lokeh? But the husband does not get malchus. Why shalor so shum Israel sheidira? The husband didn't violate anything. He didn't do anything wrong. He just placed the neder in effect. So since he affected the neder, they didn't do anything wrong. Who violated the neder? That's the woman. She will get malchus. And then if you skip two lines down, he says avala Rambam zal katav lokehu. Who gets malchus? The husband gets malchus. Why sheidira? Because he's the one who made the neder. In a case im hanauta, if he gives her hana, meaning that if he's the one who causes her through a maisa to violate his nether, then he will get malchus. Abayin aloka, she never gets malchus. The kevin delo nadra klal, since she never took a nether, how could she be chayv malchus? Lo shayfal lo yachel debaro. And the Ran argues, but let's divide who ain't aloka. It's for sure he doesn't get malchus. And he brings two proofs. One proof from later on in the Dorim about konamot, meila by konamot, and another proof from Hekdesh, that there are. We see that a person can create a restriction that impacts other people. Their restriction will cause others to violate lo yachel. So to over here, this husband took a neder, his wife will be in violation of the neder, she'll be over ba lo yachel dvaro, and she will get the malchus. Whereas the Rambam believes no. The Rambam believes no. That whoever takes the neder is the only one who can violate lo yachel dvaro. So we have to come up with a case where he helps the individual who took the neder, helps the other person to violate the neder. In that case, he will get malchus, and not the one who is mudar, the one who is the nether is about. Very interesting machlokus we've shown him. I just wanted to point it out over here. Now the Gemara is going to continue on. We're on Ted Baba Mabet now, continuing in the Gemara. Now we're going to bring a third challenge to the position of Rabbi Yehuda. So Meitavei Kikar Zu Alai Hayom Im Elech L'Makom Ploni L'Machar. This loaf of bread will be restricted to me if I go somewhere tomorrow. L'Machar Achal. If I go tomorrow there. Achal, harizebabai yelech. If he eats it, then he may not go tomorrow. So Mar seems to say what? That he ate it, which means that he could eat it. If he could eat it, then he may not walk tomorrow. But what? This is a case where the nether is today, meaning he may not eat the bread today, the tnai is tomorrow, which is if he goes somewhere. And what do you see? The Tosefta here is suggesting that if he eats, then he may not walk tomorrow. But how could he eat? According to Rabbi Yehuda, he's not allowed to eat on the first day. So when it says, but when you read these words, did you look carefully? Mitani ochel, he may eat. Achal tani, says, if he did eat. Meaning that, dechi achal, harizeh b'val yalich. Meaning that if he does eat, then he may not walk. Meaning, or he may not go to trigger the nether. So that's the point. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he may not eat on the first day at all. Why? Because today's the nether, and you might trigger the nether by the condition that is tomorrow. So he suggests, Rabbi says, don't eat. What is the price? Says achal, means that if you did eat, if you violated this restriction that Rabbi places on you, and you did go ahead and eat, then you may not walk tomorrow, because if you do walk tomorrow to the place that you would trigger your tanat, then you would be over by yachel devaro. So now the Gemara says, if that's the case, halach harzu by yachel, right, then it should be lo. Right? Why does it say afterwards? Why should it say lo yelech? I mean, that if the restriction is in place today, meaning that Rehuda has a restriction in place today, why do you say that when it comes to the second day, he should not go? Right? That it should be mahalech. He should be able to walk the second day, because you never could trigger the nether. I mean, why do we care about the tanai on the second day that he should not walk? Right? Because Rabbi Yehuda restricts the first day in eating at all, and therefore on the second day he should always be mutter to eat. Mahalech, he should be able to walk. Why do we say that he should not walk on the second day? So it's kasha Rabbi Yehuda. So I'm alcha Rabbi Yehuda, who was in the litnei mahalech. The minute that braisa, that Tosefta could have written the word mahalech also. I did the tiny ratio achal, but because it used the term achal, in a bidyevit sense, in the ratio of the Mishnah, the lo mitni le ochel, because it couldn't write ochel, So they had it written Ochel. That's not what Rabbi Yehuda believes. Rabbi Yehuda believes you may not eat on the first day because it could be triggered by the Tanai on the second day. So it had to say Achal if you did eat, if violating that restriction, then you may not walk the second day. Therefore, Tanai Seifa Halach, and therefore it used the term Bidyevet of Halach on the second day instead of the word Mehalech. Because according to Rabbi Yehuda, you could have walked Mechatzkila on the second day because you never would have eaten on the first day. And therefore, your Tanai becomes irrelevant on the second day, because even if you trigger your Tanai, you will never be in violation of Vayachel, because Rabbi Yehuda restricts you on the first day. So you're right, the Braisa could have written Vayachel. So just a quick chazar over this, we had a machlokus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Nachman about regards to when this nether is in effect up front. If you have a nether for today, and the condition to trigger the nether is the next day. In those cases, you may, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you may not violate the nether because you might trigger the tonight the next day. Rabbi Nachman says no problem. Gemara brought down our Mishnah and then two other cases that challenged Rabbi Yehuda's position by showing us Mishnayos where the nether was in effect up front. When the nether was in effect up front, it suggested that you could violate the nether because then we would tell you don't trigger it by the tonight the next day. In each of these cases, Rabbi Yehuda answered up and said that the Mishnah is really talking about if you did eat or if you violated that Isur, then do not trigger it in the next day. Or that may not, when the Isur is in effect, it's an Isur of Isura and Loke if you violate up front. But if you simply haven't gone yet, we tell you don't get Hano in order that you will not be triggering the Tanai the next day. And the Ram points out, since the Gemara went ahead and tried to spend so much time on Rabbi Yehuda, that the Halacha should be like Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, last line in the Gemara here, the last couple lines of the Gemara to take with our Mishnah. The last part of the Mishnah talks about that a person was oser his wife, Hashmish, from his wife. So Gemara asked Adam's question, Amishtabidlo, Midoraisa, Mina Torah, he's required to provide her with Hashmish. How could he restrict himself from giving her Hanas Hashmish? The Tiv, Sheirach, Sutavo, Notavo, Yigra. So Gemara says, no, but Omer Hanas Tashmishcha Alai. No, it is the case where he says that I'm restricting your Tashmish, the benefit of your Tashmish on me. So he's not restricting himself to her, he's restricting her to himself. So in that case, he's allowed to do this. And for him it's not, he doesn't want to have her Tashmish. Ah, the outcome, the net result of that there is that she also will not get her Shibud, she will not get that what she's entitled to. But that's okay, we see this in another place, we're going to see this tomorrow's daf, that when one makes a nether, and the nether can take effect, even though the net result of that nether will be that you can no longer perform the mitzvah, that's okay, because you're not going directly up against the mitzvah. And I'm going to give an example of this now, the Amar of Kana. Tashmishi alayich, if a woman says that I'm restricting my tashmish to you, kofen otah, we force her misham shoto, dishubah de mishabet leg, because she is mishubah to him. So therefore, she cannot restrict herself from providing tashmish to her husband, because she is already mishubah. So now, hanat tashmishcha alai, if she says, I don't want to get any benefit from your tashmish, then again, she's not talking about what she's responsible. She's responsible to provide herself in tashmish, but she's not responsible to say that she has to get hanoa from his tashmish, so she restricts him on her. Once he restricts him on her, then the net result of that nether is that then they can no longer have tashmish, and it works. Why? Because asur, she'ein machlin lo dam davar asur lo, we don't feed a person something that is asur to her, and she, because of her nether, her husband is now restricted to her, and we're not going to force her to have her husband have tashmish with her, even though he's entitled through the shibud to have that, because the nether is blocking it. So Ron asks a couple of questions here, just good to point out. One of the questions is, number one, is how do you have a nether here? We see that the nether, right, does not have a chefetz, does not have a devar mamashi. It's talking about hanat tashmish. It's talking about something that is not mamashi. So Ron says over here, well, maybe it's only chal midarabonon, like we said above, that even when you have intangible items, the nether is still chal midarabonon. So now the Ron asks, does that work then? If you have a nether midarabonon, can that stop the mitzvah midoraisa? Can that block? Here the husband takes a nether, which only takes effect midarabonon, and now he's going to be able to stop or not have to be responsible for the tashmish that is required of him minatorah. Does that work? And the Ron answers up, yes. That is, what? That if that's the case, that it works. That you have, by mitzvot the Rabbanan, when you take a neder, and the neder takes effect, me the Rabbanan, we say sheva al taseh. The Rabbanan can be okir a mitzvah in a Torah, be sheva al taseh, by a passive man. And here he's being passive. to uphold his neder, to keep the mitzvah derabanan of not violating his neder. He can be passive and not have tashmish and violate the d'oraisa b'shevi al pasa. The last thing the Laran asked, which is going to be in the Gemara tomorrow also, which we're going to talk about then, but also, don't we say in general, mitzvot lav lehenos nitnu? Generally, we say when someone performs a mitzvah, that they aren't given for anoa. So therefore, even though he's restricted himself from getting anoa from her, nevertheless, he has to perform the mitzvah. If he performs the mitzvah, we say mitzvot lav lehenos nitnu, and he didn't get any anoa. And therefore, he won't be in violation of the neder. The Ran says, that's not true. You have to say, towards the end of the Ran, four lines from the bottom of the Ran, Mim Tomer, Chir Mana, Tashmin Shechal Mai, Mitzar, Vaha Mitzvah, Lav, Lenu, Nenu. Yishlomar, the Chir Mina Matzah Mitzvah, Lav, Lenu, Hanim Elamar, Shein Kiyuma, Mitzvah, Choshu, Bana. That's only when he does the mitzvah, that we don't say that when you do the mitzvah, you get Hanoa, you get a pleasure from doing that mitzvah, that gives you a geshmak. That we don't say. But if there's integral Hanoa from performing the mitzvah, that your body gets Hanoa from it, that we don't say Lav Lehenos, it doesn't turn it away. Because I know while performing the mitzvah that he gets some benefit, or there's a side benefit as part of performing the mitzvah, then we don't say that mitzvah is Lav Lehenos, and that's considered full-fledged Hanoa. And therefore, that's why it's restricted over here. Having seen machlokes to be shown him in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah when we say mitzvah Lav Lehenos, if that's true. Can you be mehapich? Can you change something that is hanah? Like in this case, hanah to guf. I'd say when we say mitzvah lav lehenos nitnu means that it's not hanah. Why don't we allow him to do it then? According to those we show him, is because maybe he'll get hanah beyond which is required of him in the mitzvah. And if he gets any hanah beyond which is required of him in the mitzvah, that hanah will be in violation of his of the neder. So that's how those Rishonim explain. According to the Ran says, no, mitzvah lav lehenos nitnu is only a case where you don't actually get hanah from your guf. It means that you don't get a. We don't say you get a geshmak from the mitzvah, and that's considered hanah. No. But if you get direct hanah to your guf from performing the mitzvah, that's considered real hanah, and you can't change it. That doesn't go under the framework of mitzvot lav lehenos nitnu, and therefore you would be in violation of the neder over here. All right, we'll stop here and continue the Mishnah tomorrow.